Well, today we find ourselves at a rather chaotic beginning, or is it the chaotic end? I was going to wish you Happy New Year today, and then the gospel reading seemed to take us to the end of the world, as it does every beginning of Advent. Perhaps we are at the beginning and at the end. Maybe beginnings and endings are two sides or perspectives of the same event. Every ending is the context of a new beginning. So let's look closer at Luke's gospel, and we need to settle in because we have a whole year of Luke ahead of us. Luke is a masterful writer. He weaves historic notes and tender-hearted human stories that are rich in emotion and relational connection. And he weaves them into a beloved, inclusive gospel. And today we begin in chapter 21. And it's a funny chapter. It's a weird chapter. The narrative shifts to what I call first century science fiction. It's looking forward to this time that is yet to come in this imaginative, metaphorical language about the end of the world. Apocalyptic language, first century science fiction. What's interesting, though, is in the way that Luke writes, the apocalypse is mixed in with what is really going on, setting history somehow in a larger context of God's purpose. So it's a historical description that is laced with symbols and signs and mysterious figures of speech. I sometimes call it chicken licken language or chicken little language. You know that little tale where chicken little went out one day into the woods and an acorn fell upon her head and she thought the sky was falling in. We're sure there was an acorn, but we're not so sure there was a sky falling down. It's reality that's intermingled with metaphoric language of experience. When an event seems like the end, we somehow fold it into the end. So what endings might the Gospel of Luke be alluding to? It seems that the author is mixing in the story of Jesus and the disciples with the end of the world. And Luke chapter 21, as it takes this turn away from Jesus' teachings and ministry, it moves toward the death of Jesus. And so the first possibility of endings is that the disciples at this point were living and breathing and walking with Jesus and anticipating his death. He had told them over and over and over again. And so in this chapter, they might be thinking about the end of this relationship with their friend and rabbi, Jesus. And they fold it in because it feels like the end of their world. Maybe today's gospel is about endings and not about the end. And for the disciples, Jesus' death was possibly the end of their world. The death of a beloved friend, of a dear family member, is disorienting. It's an abrupt end to what we know, to patterns of living, to loving, to reciprocal love. And it's the end to the world that we know and are familiar with. We experience this week as we lose our friend Harold. The second possibility is that Luke is referring to the end of Jerusalem and the Jewish temple. 10 to 20 years before Luke wrote this gospel, Jerusalem was under siege by the Roman army. And in AD 70, the second temple is destroyed. The temple, like this place, was the center point of culture and worship and connection and community. And now, under Roman rule, it is destroyed. And what happens to their identity, their place? Where will they gather to remember what they are hopeful for? Where will they gather to remember the covenant of God? A God who had taken them out of Egypt, out of Babylon, and given them land and made them into the nation that they were. For these early Jewish Christians, the Roman siege of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple was the end of their world. As I was writing the sermon, I was holding the people of Anchorage in my heart as they experienced an end to the world they knew in Friday's earthquake. One school student tweeted to another one, well, I guess when you tweet, it goes everywhere. I don't tweet, I don't know. "I am shaking," she wrote, "and our teachers are keeping us under our tables and telling us there will be an aftershock, maybe in 5 minutes, we don't know. I'm in the art classroom, and everything is literally destroyed." Everything is destroyed. The end of their known world. So Luke situates this in endings. And as he does this, he draws in this apocalyptic language that's high in symbolism that speaks also of a great end. The end of the natural world. The end of what humans need to survive on earth. The sun, the moon, the stars, the roar of the seas. And though this language is symbolic and not literal, it does cause us to sit up and pause, doesn't it? Because it speaks profoundly with what we are witnessing of the consequences of our human irresponsibility with the earth. Global warming and water tables reduced, the poisoning of our oceans and seas, and the extinction of species. Perhaps this third ending that Luke's alluding to is a future warning, the end of our natural world. Wow. So this chapter taps into our sadness of endings and disappointments. And in Luke's gospel, with this highly apocalyptic language, this symbolic language, it casts our view backwards to historic endings, casts our view forwards to the possibility of extinctions and natural endings. But it does more than that. It also calls us into discipleship in our present, to be faithful, to have a hope that resists cynicism. Apocalyptic language is actually a dramatic witness to the tenacity of faith and hope among the people of God in the present. When people say, "Where is the promise? Where is the coming one?" This apocalyptic language is a response of hope to the cynic who mocks the faithful. Because in the midst of despair and disaster, faith turns its face toward God. Not only for a word from God, but for a vision of the end of misery. Faith turns its face toward God. And so though this text lures us to consider endings, it inserts a promise that is our hope. Christ is near. Christ is near. And at some point, our worlds fall apart and life changes and the lights go out and we don't know how to work the sound system and, you know, things happen. And more often than not, we see this as the end. And when these things happen, Jesus says, remember the fig tree, but read the signs correctly. When its branches become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you are in chaos, when you don't know what to do, Christ is near. John Caputo writes that hope is the risky business of calling for the coming of what we cannot see coming, of saying yes to the future where nothing is guaranteed. Hope dares to say come. It dares to pray come to what it cannot yet see coming. Hope against all hopes, trusting God is near. I've been immersing myself in an author who's new to me. Rebecca Solnit is an American writer and a historian and an activist. And two of her books that are worthy of note is Hope in the Dark and A Paradise Built in Hell. Interesting titles. In her writing, she reflects on natural disasters and she writes another narrative. She says that hope is not some naive optimism, that everything's going to be fine and we can just sit back. But in the sense of uncertainty, hope is coming to terms with the fact that we don't know what will happen. We let go of certainty and we act in a new way, in a risky way. That is hope, she says. So she writes the other side of stories of disaster. And one of the stories she writes about is the San Francisco Oakland earthquake of 1906. Killed about 3,000 people, and the whole city center was annihilated. But experiencing this earthquake was Dorothy Day. She was in Oakland. She's 8 years old, and she watches it, and she described later in her life two phenomena. She said, I watched people falling apart, and I watched people falling together. And Rebecca Solnit says that in the mix of these disasters, there is something about a supersaturated immediacy that develops human connection. There is a spiritual awakening where people are more alive. They connect with each other and they work together like never before. It's the other side of the ending. It's the beginning. Dorothy Day wrote after this experience, "Why can't people always live this way?" And that's what she tried to do. Within every seeming ending, Christ is near. Perhaps Christ is in the very cloud itself. I do not understand it, but I am learning to trust it. I noticed this week on a much smaller scale, the earthquake that was our St. Catherine's office. You have to ask Siri. It was chaotic. And the Spirit nudged us to reach out for help. and some emails to our wardens and treasurer, and suddenly the world feels okay again. We are held. The anxiety diminishes, and Christ is near. So this Advent, we contemplate the advent of our lives as we are called to trust the coming one who is more than our chaos, to receive the God who comes to us in our endings and beginnings. And in the words of 5th century Boethius, to see thee is the end and the beginning. Thou carriest me and thou goest before. Thou art the journey and the journey's end. Amen.